I'm delighted to welcome Joe Hart to the podcast. Welcome.
The manager wished me happy birthday in the meeting today. He told me I was combined age of two of the lads who came on.
It's however old you feel in your head.
Absolutely.
Mate. That's exactly what it is.
That's what old people say, and I say it a lot. I was somewhere in football. I'd gone from having a real solid position in football to just kind of, I don't know where I was going. I was a 30-year-old loney. No one wants to be a loney when they're 30 years old.
And I hadn't even thought about it yet until this guy said, big boots to fill. Joe Hart's like, he's the man. And I'm thinking, you know, don't need him.
He's not fast. He's so one-footed, it's a joke. He's weak. But then again, no one could touch him. They're trying to sign Kaká. They're trying to sign Buffon. Proper big dogs. Pep came in. I wasn't his goalkeeper. I'm 2 years into a five-year deal, a strong deal that someone can't just rip up. I'm technically an asset at the club, so they can't just give me away, even though they didn't need me anymore. So it was a bit of a mess. I just love diving around, love messing about, love taking shots. But like I say, like, football's class, innit?
Hello everybody, welcome to the Fosscast. We are in Glasgow today because we are doing a podcast with one of my all-time Premier League favourite goalkeepers. I do actually mean that, honestly. And one of the best goalkeepers I got to see up close and personal in training. I'm delighted to welcome Joe Hart to the podcast.
Welcome. Thanks, guys. Thanks,
that was
guys.
Nice. I told you it was a nice
that
intro,
lovely,
didn't I?
Mate. That was lovely, yeah.
First and foremost, mate, happy birthday. As you can see on the table, we've got you a nice little cake for you.
Thank you.
We didn't get cake candles or anything though, mate, all right? It's that was Seb's fault, by the way. Seb got the thing.
Nice one, Seb.
Yeah, so it's a nice thing.
I appreciate it.
Lovely city, this is Glasgow, by the way, mate. We've just had a little drive through. We've only been here for like 20 minutes or something like that, but this is class, isn't it?
Nah, Glasgow's been really cool. Obviously I was attracted to come up for Celtic, amazing football club. Did a little bit of research when the opportunity came and people have spoke so highly about it. I love it, family love it. It's been a special time in my life.
How much of a decision is that at first when someone like Celtic comes in? Because to be fair to you, you've always been one of these players who just wants to go and play football, haven't you? You've been, like I say, you've been out to Torino, you've been out on loan to other places before, so you're willing to move to play football. But what was that like, that decision? Was it one of those where you're thinking, I don't know if I can come up with a family, I don't know if I can travel it or anything like that? Was that a consideration?
I was in a different place when the opportunity came to come here. I just finished at Spurs pretty abruptly. I'd kind of made a decision to go there and I wanted to be a part of their club and do my best to help. You know, I've said before, I wasn't naive. I didn't think I was going to go and dislodge Hugo as number one, but I thought, you know what? Spoke to Jose. I thought I can come and try and bring something to this club. So I took my family down to London. I've got young children, son's eight now, so, and then a younger daughter, but he'd done a couple of schools and I was like, we'll do that. Then we'll come back up when we've done what we need to do at Tottenham and probably play a bit
more. What did you sign at Tottenham? 1 year?
Two years. And then obviously things ended pretty abruptly there. And I said, you know what? I don't know if I need this anymore. I love playing football. Love it. But I didn't love professional football. Didn't love it as a job.
What were you, 34 at the time?
34. 30,
yeah.
But I play because I love it.
Yeah.
That's why I turn up. I play because I love it. And I didn't... And it wasn't... I wasn't quite getting back what I was putting in. But then obviously I got the opportunity to come here. I spoke to Ange. I've always known about Celtic, you know, a big phrase as well. I know how much he loved it up here.
He did love it up here, to be fair, didn't he?
It's just got a lot of history in the game. But to answer your question, I decided that my football wasn't important enough to be number one in the family anymore. So I wanted them to be settled and happy and safe.
Yeah.
And then I would just said, I want this opportunity to go up there, but I'll make it work. I'll work in between the two. But you need to be settled in school and start your life. Football's not the most important thing as a family now, but it's still important to me. I want to make it work, and I've done my best to do that.
Do you find, Joe, you mentioned about loving playing football. I think you're the same, Ben. Mm. Do you find, guys, at kind of the age that you're at now, that almost like the business of football just kind of does it wear you down a bit?
Look, I just think we're lucky, mate, because it is a business. It's a job. And I don't hold anything against anyone who doesn't love it, who isn't passionately involved. They're earning a living for their family. They're talented and they're making the most of it, whatever that may be. I just feel absolutely blessed. I remember when I was a kid, I remember one guy saying to me, like, diving around in the mud, like just loving life. about 30 years old, he looked like a, I remember thinking, fucking, you're a dinosaur. But I'm obviously 36 now, and he went, you'll learn, young'un, you'll learn. As in, like, you're having fun now, but you watch.
It'll wear you down.
Yeah, you watch. And I remember thinking, like, whatever. And I still think that now. I just love diving around, love messing about, love taking shots, want to go in goal, want to have fun, want to talk football, want to be around football. I don't see that. Yeah, like you said, you do see people that are ground down and see things differently, but that's life, you know? I just see it as such a blessing that I'm still sat here, at, you know, with a birthday cake for 36 years old, buzzing.
Yeah. But we've shot a video today, right? So you two did a video, challenge video against each other. And like, you're a pretty enthusiastic guy, right, Ben?
Yep.
Joe, first time I've met you today, and it was brimming. It was like overflowing with enthusiasm. And it was really funny just watching him laughing behind the camera.
Yeah. How can you not? How can you not? You know, people, I'd love to be in your shoes as a footballer. Like, well, you're not getting these shoes. Like, I'm not letting them go. I love it. And I'll continue to love it after. First, you know, if I go home, I'm playing football. Once I'm done playing professional football, whenever that may be, I'll still play football. I want to play in the charity games. I want to play, help my friends out. I want to play in this. I want to do that. I want to mess about with Fozzy because I've got some payback for what's just gone on today.
By the way, put some context. We've made a football video for the Cycling GK channel this afternoon. We did it at the Celtic Triangle. It was actually pretty good, wasn't it? We're trying to score some goals. We're trying to basically say our goalie's good enough to play as a striker. Could we play as a striker? And with today showing, 100% we could, by the way, because we were on flames.
You're notching a few, aren't you?
We were on flames, weren't we? We had a combined age. Oh, you said it at one point. You said, we've got a combined age of 76 between me and you, Ben, and we're like a bunch of kids. We're like a bunch of massive kids running about the place.
Yeah. I got the manager wished me happy birthday in the meeting today. And he told me I was combined age of two of the lads who came on.
It's horrible, isn't it?
It just left that on me. I was like, right.
Cheers, boss.
Yeah. Hey, aren't you? Someone told me the other day, you're the oldest ever player to play for Wrexham.
Yep.
And you're the oldest at the club by 5 years, aren't you?
No, I think Chomp's 36.
I think he's 35. Well, four or 5 years.
Yeah, but it's however old you feel in your head.
Absolutely.
Mate. That's exactly what it is.
That's what old people say, and I say it a lot.
So when you were saying about diving around and just trying to have a nice time, right? So we did a podcast with Nick Pope last week, and I always love to say to goalies, like, who's the best goalie you've ever got to train with? Who's the best player you played with in terms of goalkeeping? And he thought about it for a little bit, and he went, Joe Hart. And I went, yeah. And he went, yeah, it's just his enthusiasm. He's like a big kid. He just wants to have a nice time. He's always got a smile on his face. He's always energetic, diving around the place, wanting to do extra shooting after training. I went, it's exactly what my answer is. So that's exactly what I said. The same thing. Best goalie I ever got to see up close and personal in training was yourself for that exact reason. Not only that, but you're a cat. You know what I mean? You're an absolute cat. But I remember going away with England and just coming back and going, lads, honestly, he is a joke. You are a joke, mate. Just like Tigger. That's how I used to describe you, Tigger. He did. Too much energy.
Now, look, mate, that's really humbling because two goalies that I've got a heap of respect for on and off the field. But I've always thought that. If I don't even know what I bring to the table. I really don't because I can only be me. But I think previous answer, I just love going in goal.
Yeah.
Love it. Love being around amazing talent, amazing players, amazing goalies. Like that energy. Look, we're not being asked to do too much. I just try and get the most out of me. But I don't even know why I'm trying to get the most out of it. It's not like there's a particular end goal. There never really has been an end goal for me. It's just have a good time and make saves. Have banter, try and get on top of someone, try and get out from someone when they're on top of you. That sounds horrendous, but you know what I'm trying to say. What a life. What a life.
I'm with you, mate. That's what I mean. Don't let it drag you down. Have a nice time and enjoy it. That's what it's about, you know.
And what about at Burnley? Because we were saying to Nick about that, weren't we? And that's some three goalies at a football club, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh. That was a strange time, but it was a great time. Look, I was somewhere in football. I'd gone from having a real solid position in football to just kind of, I don't know where I was going. I knew who I was and what I was, but my position, you need a place in football.
Yeah.
You can be whoever you like. You can have all the talent in the world or not have any talent, but you need a place, especially as a goalkeeper. And I'd lost my place. I was kind of like, I didn't know what I was. I was a 30-year-old loney. No one wants to be a loney when they're 30 years old. and then this kind of crazy opportunity came at Burnley with Tom coming back from a difficult injury. Nick had been, you know, come in and had the debut season, like, now that, well, obviously now I know him, that I expect him to have, but no one expected him to have. He was so good. And then he did his shoulder pre-season, and then I spoke to Sean Dyche, and he kind of said, look, I played against you when I was at Northampton and you were at Shrewsbury. I think a lot of you, I think it's a great opportunity for you to come in, help us, we'll help you. Hopefully it goes well. And if it does, you know, I've got these two amazing goalies anyway, and, you know, you move on or whatever. And I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. You know, it didn't work out necessarily that well for me, but it was class to be a part of. Like, wow. Like, love Heats anyway. I'll go way back with Heats. Got to know Popey. He unbelievable rehabilitation phase from a nasty injury.
Yeah,
nasty
shoulder injury. He's telling us about it, yeah.
But just took it like a champ, came back in. You know, the dynamic changed constantly and my position in the team changed, but I was quite happy to support and try and push these two top keepers on. And just like I've always been treated, I want to treat them. And, you know, both doing, you know, Tom's similar sort of age to me, but doing a, you know, I suppose from the outside, probably not doing anything, but me knowing Tom and me how important someone like him is at Manchester United, how well he's thought of. And Nick's obviously smashing it at the Geordies and making a lot of people smile.
I put it out there. I said, with Popey, I said, I think for three goalies to be at the same football club, I think that is the best three you'll ever get anywhere, probably in the history of goalkeeping. Do you know what I mean? I'm not joking there when I say that. You think you'll probably only ever get that in a national team, wouldn't you? You'd get that in a national team. Otherwise, you ain't getting it at a club level. No chance.
Mate, the level was good. And you know what? It was everything that Burnley offered. It was just a real humble place to be, a real hungry place to be. It was a place where people could laugh at each other and not take offence to it. People could laugh at it. It was a bit of a strange situation, but it was a good situation. And it was the manager makes the decision and then we all just kind of deal with it and get on with it. And if that means supporting someone, if someone's having a bad day and, you know, or their head's elsewhere, they can, you know, it was even to the point of, you know, letting each other know, look, I might not be on it today. Just give me a yard. Yeah, no problem. Get around them, look after them and we move.
Players like that all the time, but
did you? We heard about this Tom Heaton imaginary dives, like full stretch dives, like on his own
visualization.
Do you remember that?
Heaton is a barn pot man, but he's an amazing, amazing guy. But he's different. But Heaton's, you know, he would. What's the Nintendo used to flip open?
DS.
So yeah, the DS, he'd be doing his...
brain training.
He'd be brain training.
Not wrong with that.
But every morning, religiously, he'd have certain things. He'd be... But that guy, man, like, every little bit of ability and every little bit of him that he had, he used.
Yeah,
every morning, he was in the gym like a young lad practicing his left foot. The best was when I used to see him doing like finger weights and stuff.
No,
like that.
He was not.
But do you know the best
finger weights for that big save? Nutter. But do you know what I loved about him? And I know you're gonna have to bleep this out, but he didn't give a fuck what anyone thought. Yeah. He was just doing the best that would make him the best goalkeeper. Yeah. And like the lads, like I say, Burnley was a unique place because you could take the mick out of him, and he's not gonna take offense. He's like, pfft. That is me, mate. Like, I'm trying to get the best out of myself. You do you. And the diving and stuff like that. The breathing, so funny to watch. The facials, I still buzz off. I'd call him now just to get a buzz off each.
What a legend, little Tommy. I want to go back to, Celtic, all right? I want to talk about, obviously this city, the fans, everybody knows the fans are famous up here for being double passionate. I want to talk about this derby, this Celtic Rangers derby. You had one a couple of weeks ago, actually. Celtic at the minute, thoroughly on top, by the way, when it comes to the local derbies. How big a game is that up here? And how do you prepare for that mentally? Because that you know for a fact that if you lose that game or if you have a bad performance, then that's going to follow you around for a little bit, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it is big. There's a lot of eyes on it, but I've loved all the derbies. Like I was when we were doing the thing before. When I was 17, I was playing Shrewsbury Wrexham. Like that was huge, mate. Like that was my everything. Yeah. That was my like I grew up Shrewsbury, and then you know moving through them, go to kind of City United. Like then I'm going on loan to Birmingham. Like the Birmingham Derby. Like,
yeah, Birmingham Villa or Birmingham Wolves.
Like, I just think that. However big the fan base is and whatever people's like, luckily, not luckily, but rightfully so, people have got a great opinion of Celtic and of Rangers of their support because they are very passionate. Yeah. But any club you're part of, whether it's globally passionate or just the 2,000 or 3,000 that travel with you to away
local
games.
Local diehards.
Like, you feel it, you feel it. And I don't know about you, but I'm of an age of, look, I'm just going to try my best. And if stuff follows me around and people think they can take the mick out of me for something that I did bad as a goalkeeper, like whatever. It's not through anything other than me trying my best. But it is special. And the noise in moments here, like the moments are really, really noisy.
Yeah.
There's a constant hum, constant buzz, constant, you know, amazing singing. But big noise, big moments get big noises here.
Cool, goosebump kind of big
moments. Do you think it's the biggest... It's got to be one of the biggest derbies in the world, hasn't it? It has to be.
Well, I don't know, and I wouldn't want to disrespect anyone else's. Yeah, because to them,
theirs is the most important. Like you said, it could be a local 2,000-3,000, but for them, that's everything, isn't it?
Yeah. But it's good. It's really good. I love playing them, and they're hard. They're hard games, and you really feel the ebb and the flow of what's going on, off the field as well as on the field, and. There's like, you know, the sharp intakes of breath in the big moments. And like I say, the all-out aggression and noise of something going for you or against you, it's a good feeling.
What you said then a minute ago about this feeling of like, you've got to a place now where you don't really care about making a mistake. Or is that something that you've learned? Is that like experience? Because I think that's something for me that benefited me massively. Once I got into my 30s, I think I was able to somehow flip a switch and go, you know what? I'm trying my best. I am. And if I make a mistake, I'll happily come in and go, sorry, lads, I ain't trying to do it. But it is what it is, isn't it?
It's 100% come of age, mate. And if I were to like track my progress, I kind of didn't think till I was about 27. I didn't think, I just did.
Autopilot.
Just like, what's next? Who, you know, I'm in goal, I'll go dive, say, see the. Then 27, I'd say, I was at a stage and a status, if you like, when I was like, whoa, maybe I'm one of them guys. And how does one of those guys behave? And he can't do that. He can't make that mistake. And
just overthinking stuff.
Yeah. Like, I just used to roll out and train. Then all of a sudden I was rolling out and it was the first time I ever got taken out of a team, dropped by a team, Manuel Pellegrini. It was probably about 8 games in. And I was a hazard. I was a hazard on the pitch. Like I was a problem. And I was thinking, in the previous to that, I couldn't do no wrong. And it wasn't through me trying to do anything other than just try and be my best. Be there for the lads, have my relationship. And then I was coming for things that I shouldn't, not coming for things that I shouldn't. Letting things bounce off me that maybe I shouldn't, trying to catch things that I shouldn't.
Yeah.
And it was a really confusing time because I was like, I've never had to think about anything. And good time for me. It was a time when, remember we did a podcast with Jamie Edwards, the guy that
I worked with.
I got in contact, spoke with him.
On Gloved for your YouTube channel. Yeah,
Gloved, love Jamie. And that was the start of something, you know, me growing again, going again. But in terms of being okay with making mistakes, I've kind of always been okay with them because I've never thought I was perfect. I know no one is, and it's a tough one to line to go with because you want to the best of yourself, but you also got to be pretty real. And mistakes happen. I've never gone out and intended to make one.
Yeah.
And I've also done things that I didn't think I was capable of doing in terms of the good side. So with the good comes the bad, and obviously you try and keep them to a minimum, but it's just sometimes it's just not possible.
And it mad. This is so it, like this is goalkeeping. I think goalkeeping is a completely separate sport to being a footballer.
Yeah,
it is. I think it's the most. I think with football, you being an outfield player, you have the ability to be able to switch it off and just do it autopilot because you have to do it most of the time. You have to spend an autopilot. I think with goalkeeping, you have so many times, so many periods where you are in your own head so much and you'll just let it run away with stuff, don't it? It just goes crazy and you're trying to calm it down and you're trying to say, what are you doing, you dickhead? Just just relax and have a nice time. Because when you're on training pitch, I guarantee, well, I've seen you, you're like a big kid, ain't you? You just, everything's so easy. Then the second you start to think about it, it's a problem, mate, it is.
Yeah, it becomes jerky. It doesn't come, the rhythm's not there. The second guessing's the worst. How could you go from literally doing everything all day, every day, without even the second thought, to just because it's...
Yeah, in front of people.
In front of people, or there's something on the line, or I don't know, to second guess what you're doing. And why would you do it? Like, especially in our position, because the moment you second guess...
Oh, mate, trouble. Whew, you're on the back foot.
I would be able to count on probably one hand the amount of times that I've second guessed and it worked out for me.
Yeah, really, yeah. The rest of it, no, you're going to fail. You're going to fall
it's
short.
It's just going to cause trouble.
What advice then have you got for young goalies or young players that might be going through something a little bit similar to that, where they're just trying to, just overthinking it a little bit too much, overcomplicating it?
Make the mistakes. I think you know, one question which obviously comes, that you've probably had it, if you could go back again, what would you tell yourself?
Yeah.
I wouldn't tell myself anything. You've got to make mistakes to learn. You've got to be in good situations, bad situations. What I say to help it, there's got to be that core belief at the bottom of it to have put you in a position where making the mistake is an irregular thing.
Mm.
So just take yourself back to that. Take yourself back to that. I think what I said there, how many times, you know, I think many people count on one hand, goalkeepers, that the afterthought was the right one.
Yeah.
Or would have helped the situation. Instinct, gut, everything that you've trained for, believe in it and go with it. And being perfect is massively out of the question.
Oh, it's impossible.
And in a position that we are, the fact that the inevitable is going to happen, it happens.
Yeah.
But I think you've just got to draw on the fact that many, many times, I think many goalkeepers will have do something in a split second in an instinct and have no idea why they did it or how they did it and be like, "Poor, that was amazing."
Yeah, that's class. It's lovely them, isn't it?
Yeah. So why would you not draw on them, right? The same as much as you're going to worry or think about something that didn't necessarily.
Do you know what's really important for like young goalies and your young sports people out there? So I played last night, Joe, right? I played and it was 0-0 in about the 55th minute or something like that. Somebody played a ball back to me and I went to clear it and I shanked the shit out of it, right? Yeah. And I mean over there, shanked the shit out of it. So much so that they could even break and got onto it. And I'm thinking, I've just shanked one. It's 0-0. If they score here, we lose this game. Then we're going into the final two game. And my mind
was that what went through your head?
I promise
last night?
You, my mind just went woof, 0 to 100 mile an hour in a split second, right? And then for about 2 or 3 minutes afterwards, I kept thinking, nobody passed me the ball back. I don't want the ball back to my feet. Just leave me alone. Yeah. That is the most natural thing that I promise you will be going through pretty much every sports person's head in the history of ever. It's just how it works. It's normal and it's natural. You've just got to learn to kind of go, what a load of bollocks.
But then in amongst all those thoughts, someone will pass the ball back to you and you'll just do something perfectly
lovely.
Fine, perfectly right. And you'll think, oh.
Yeah, back to
all
normal.
Right, you can pass to me again. I do know what I'm doing.
It's true though, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's mad, isn't it? If you come for a cross in the first minute of a game, you know you're having a good game.
Yeah.
You know it. If you come for that cross and drop it, mate, I do not put another ball in the box for the rest of this game, please. It is horrible, honestly. It's horrible. It's the beauty of being a goalie, mate.
I think it is, mate. It's a massive roller coaster, but you got to laugh at yourself.
Damn right,
like,
I know. Yeah,
you laugh. We're actually supposed to be one of like the good ones.
I'm talking about
the whole spectrum of goalkeeping from Sunday League to a 4-year-old putting his first pair of gloves. We're like in the upper. This and that mad stuff's going through our heads.
It goes to a show. It happens to everyone, doesn't it?
100% it happens.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
So you two guys just roll back a few years. You were telling me on the way here, Ben, that you very, very nearly played against each other at Shrewsbury and
Kidderminster. So this is when we were, you would have been 18, I think, at the time.
I was a bambino.
Yeah, you were a bambino. You had the biggest head I've ever seen in my life. It is massive. I remember, I could see you from, I was playing the game. So it was Kidderminster against Shrewsbury. And I was playing the game and I could see this kid on the bench with the biggest head of blonde hair ever. Like, I mean, peacock spiky. Oh, it was all over the shop, weren't it?
The highlights were in, mate.
Yeah. So that was our first ever time we've kind of like come across each other. And then, like, I remember obviously keeping an eye out for him or whatever. And he went and then got the move, obviously, to Man City. And it just sort of blew up from there, really. But, mate, I love that part of it. You know, I think my grounding is coming up, playing for these sort of teams, going out on loan and getting experience, being amongst men is the best thing you can do, mate. And I know the fact it would have been the same for you because you just want to play football, don't you?
Yeah. I was thrust in at a very young age. I wasn't part of a big club. I was part of Shrewsbury Town, and you know, I was on the bench in the league when I was 15.
Were you?
Yeah, but not. It wasn't. I never thought I was a particularly like blistering talent, but you know, circumstances back then. You had the number one goalie, number two, then the youth team goalie, maybe another one, and then I was somewhere down. I don't know how. I was just jumping between age groups, playing resi games. The goalkeeper coach really believed in me and would push me and. One way or another, I was on a bench when I was probably three or four times that season.
Wow.
God knows what happened if I played, but you know, I don't even know if the manager knew my name. He just had to have a goalie on the bench and I was next in line. But I remember Fozzie, I've never warmed up. I was warming the goalie up and these balls were just landing in our box. I was like, who is this freak down the other end?
They're like, just pummeling
them. Ben Foster on loan from, and I was like, what? And then what? You were wicked in the game. Absolutely wicked. I remember us winning 1-0. I remember Ryan Lowe scoring.
Yeah,
the Preston
Ryan
manager.
Lowe, well done, yeah.
And I remember thinking, ooh, okay. That's exciting. And then obviously, you progressed and then we crossed paths.
So when you like come across each other at that young age, obviously you've both gone on to have great careers, but do you then subconsciously just keep an eye on each other's career? Or
100% did, because I just like I say, attention was caught from you being able to launch at the length of the field. Then you're like absolute cat. You know, then obviously the Man United interest and stuff like that. It's like, well, where are we going with this? And just kind of followed it. And yeah, it's life, isn't it? It's mad.
I want to talk about another one of your loans then, Birmingham City, because this was the big one, wasn't it? This was the start of your real kind of like, yeah, come on then, let's start doing a bit now.
So this is good. I like that you said that, because I was I signed for City when I was 19. Did a season, did a few loans. Assigned as a three with it, just to see what I was made of, which was great. You know, I was fucking buzzing, mate. Premier League, Shrewsbury Town, League Two at Premier League. Ended up getting on the bench quite a lot of injuries. And the year after Sven came in, and then Sven, I was 20. I had Sven, Kasper.
Yeah.
Myself, Kasper, and Andreas Isaksson, the number one, who was a Swedish
goalie. Yeah, Swedish,
time,
yeah.
Who got injured quite early, broke his thumb. So it was just me and Kasper, two young pups. And Sven ended up doing this thing. Kasper started the season. I dislocated, like, you know, Kasper probably and could have easily being number one, but Andreas had broke his thumb. I dislocated my finger, so Kasper started the season, and then Sven decided to put me in for 7 games. Then he wanted to give Andreas 7 games.
Wow,
really strange. But it was all quite welcoming. You know, I don't know if you know Sven, but like lovely.
Yeah,
man.
He would. He was down to earth. They're very calm.
Lovely,
very
lovely
calm.
Man.
Yeah.
And then so that's 21 games in of a 38, and then he made a thing that he was going to decide he was going to go and goal, and he chose me, and I played the rest of the season. So I had a good season. So I'm 20 now, 21. Then Mark Hughes came in. So that was under Sinawatra, Taksin Sinawatra.
Yeah,
City got
bought. Yeah.
That all, I don't know how that ended, but that's not for me to say. Probably the lawyers are dealing with that one.
Yeah, leave it online.
And then the Abu Dhabi money group came in with Khaldun and Sheikh Mansour. So we were like, right, okay. Is this genuine or not? Turned out it was. And they bought Mark Hughes in, doing an unbelievable job at Blackburn. And they started spending some big dough, big money. And Mark, I'm 22, 21, I don't know what I am, 21, 22. Casper's same age as me. And he wants a proper number one. He wants an established number one. Yeah, whatever you are, sound, I've got this money. And I feel like a number one's important. You know, they're trying to sign Kaká. They're trying to sign Buffon. They're like proper big dogs. and he'd just been at Blackburn. And I'm kind of like number one-ish at the moment, so I'm just waiting to see what happens. Anyway, they couldn't get in who they wanted, so I started the season, played some 50 Prem games in it. And then at the very end of February, they were trying to get Brad Friedel, and then they turned their attention to Shea, bought Shea in. Shea's an absolute...
Yeah, like, Shea Given. He's
icon,
Shea Given.
Man. Like Newcastle was struggling. Shea was making noise that he wanted to leave, bought Shea in. So then I was back on the bench. And so City, they kind of... fuck me off at this point.
Yeah.
Like, whatever, you're gone. Go and do it. But I think I was year one of a 4-year deal that I'd signed when I'd been doing well.
Mm-hmm.
So then it's a bit of a dilemma. Got me like obviously making the noise that if you don't want me, it's fine, but I need to go and play. I want to go and play. You know, if you, they're like, fine, go and find somewhere to go. So I went to Birmingham with intention to leave. Like I only went on loan because I had so long on my contract and they were probably putting too big a price on my head for what I warranted.
You could get to go out, you could show everybody what you're about, you'd have teams like lining up to sign you, hopefully.
Yeah, that was the plan, obviously. Yeah. That was the best case. And you know, Alex McLeish came in and fair play, he took me on, obviously, coming up. And you know, it didn't start, I was okay to start with Mike. Mike Taylor's a top keeper, just bought Mike and Colin Doyle had bought him up from the Championship. I was okay, and then about fifth game in, I think we played City, so Mike played, drew 0-0. And there was a big decision to make. Big decision. And he said, look, I think I bought you here, I believe in you. And then the season went really well from there. And then Mark Hughes got sacked, Mancini came in, he wanted a different kind of goalkeeper to Shea, and you know, everything kind of aligned, and I started what I was really doing at Manchester City then.
So that Birmingham loan, I remember watching some of your performances that season, and I remember one away at Stoke City. Do you remember this one?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Mate, like somebody saved, like, so you could have had 3 or 4 for the showreel, mate. It was ridiculous. Just relentless save after save after save. And it was then when, obviously, end of that season, like, you smashed it, and you could have signed 4 probably. If Man City wouldn't have kept you, there would have been at least 8 or 10 Premier League teams who would have gone, yep, yeah, we'll take him. 100% we'll take him. He's good to go. So the next season starts. I then got the move to Birmingham City. Yep. Right, so I'm sort of filling your boots. So even then, straight away, I'm thinking, oh my God, like, we don't need this. Do you remember when we were coming back from Vegas? This is incredible, mm-hmm. right? We were coming home from Vegas, right? And I had just signed for Birmingham like a week before, and there were 4 Blue Nose, massive Blue Nose fans on the line in front of us, right? And they went, Ben, oh yeah, big boots to fill, mate. And I hadn't even thought about it yet until this guy said, big boots to fill. Joe Hart's like, he's the man. And I'm thinking, fucking hell, don't need this.
that was a serious kind of, at the time.
Yeah.
I think that was when it dawned on you, weren't it? But
yeah, like,
did you feel pressure going in? Because Joe had smashed it the year before.
Not so much, I don't think, because I was, but for me, it was a massive thing. So I got to go home. I was living back in the Midlands again. I was back home and comfy, and it all, I just had a feeling it would all work out. It was absolutely gold. But that season in particular, I remember the first game of the season. So we were away at Sunderland. We drew 1-1, I think we did. And all the lads were, but lads loved you, by the way, at Birmingham. They absolutely buzzed off you. They were always looking out for you. And I remember talking to a few of them before the game had started or whatever. And we're talking about Man City, and you were playing Tottenham. And I remember saying, I worry for him though, because I just can't see that Mancini's going to put him in ahead of Shea Given. It's Shea Given, do you know what I mean? He's proven, he is what he is. And then the game had finished, and then that game that you played, you started the game. So Mancini picked you ahead of Shea Given, and then I watched the footage again. Oh my God, mate. I can just see you kicking, who was it? De Jong or somebody, like another block or something like that. And then,
That was wild, mate, because Roberto had brought me back in and said, look, please just come and, you know, let me make a decision.
Yeah.
So, Shay, don't know if you know Shay, what an amazing guy.
Legend,
like,
yeah.
Love Shay.
I love that. I'm glad you said that. If you'd have said he's a dickhead, it would have broke my heart, mate.
Absolutely love Shay. Loved him as a goalie, loved him as a professional. And when he came in, you know, we kind of had that moment. Obviously, he's senior pro. Like, he didn't have to have that moment with me, but he kind of went like, I was like, look, I love you at pieces, so whatever you need to do it, it's not on you. And he was like, right, always treating me beautifully.
Yeah, that's nice, yeah.
And so obviously when I came back, I could tell, I think he was injured towards the end of the season, and like him and Mancini, I don't know why, they just clashed.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, and Shea's strong. Shea won't be taken for granted, or I think Robert, like being Italian, he had this idea of a bigger goalkeeper.
Yeah.
And he kind of held that against Shea. Like, he didn't let him just be Shea.
He wanted something more from Shea that wasn't Shea.
Yeah, I think he just, rather than just enjoying the great goalkeeper that he was, and then Shea could probably felt that, and there was a bit of like, and Roberto saw that I did well and asked me if I'd come back. Because I was adamant I was gone.
Yeah.
I was like, what do you want me back for? And he was like, you know, come back. So anyway, the pre-season, we shared it a lot, and we didn't know till he flipped the board of the morning.
Of the game, of that Tottenham game.
Of who was going to play, we didn't know.
Because isn't the unwritten rule in football the last
friendly.
The last friendly, starts the last friendly generally.
Yeah, and it was kind of, it was leaning, I'd say, if it was gonna, it was leaning slightly towards myself.
Right.
But that's my version of it. Shay's version might be that he was leaning towards him because it was hard to work out and, you know, after a good, and it was at, so 2009, 2010, England had gone out, and it was a good opportunity for me to play for England then as well.
Yeah.
First England camp was in August, so obviously I needed to start for City to give myself that best opportunity.
Yeah, England had just lost to Germany 4-1 in that World Cup there, yeah, then, hadn't they? Yeah,
you know, with Jamie being the great goalkeeper he is, but an older goalkeeper, and kind of greeny, getting scapegoated with what happened against the USA, top keeper that he is. And I was pushing hard from my Birmingham season. And so anyway, and then, flipped the chart. And it was a... Like it was like your Notts County script, mate.
You just couldn't write it.
I was in goal. I was thinking this is a bit awkward. Like they must have had 7 or 8 shots, like really good shots, deflection shots where I could like do this kind of beautiful dive. Yeah, you never get the opportunity to do.
There was
them.
A free kick one in there that was just phenomenal. Yeah, mate. It was just, over the wall.
Like blocks, big saves. White Hart Lane, what a place to play football.
Old White Hart Lane, that stadium when it was rocking,
and they were a good team, like really good team. And Shay was laughing on the bench. Like Shay went, "Don't think I'll be getting in anytime soon." You couldn't have written it. What am I, 23? Just loving life. You couldn't write it.
So when you like at the start of the season, you don't know. Obviously, you said Shay treated you so well, and obviously a lot of mutual respect. But when goalkeepers are kind of vying for number one spot, is it spoken about between the two goalies? I.e., would they go, "Who do you think he's going to start with, mate?" Is that a conversation that occurs?
A little bit. But that was like for Shay to lead, you know, being the senior.
Sure.
Man.
Yeah, nice, yeah.
I was always kind of knew my place and know my place. So that was Shay's role, as it probably would say there was a young goalie coming now who was in a similar situation. I know that big goalies being how they are, I'd probably have to lead that conversation. Yeah. I'd be happy, if someone's better than me or someone needs to play ahead of me, then... I'm not putting it on that person. It's if you've got anything, you've got to speak to the manager. And if you want to have a problem with someone, you've got to go at the top. But Shay kind of led it, and we kind of laughed and joked about it. But we also worked damn hard, and both wanted it to be us. But football's mad, man. You just need to get on with things. And
damn right you do as well.
And it's not everything's set up for you to just move in one direction. You need to be prepared to go here, to go there, to come here, to maybe come back.
I must admit though, I would like my manager to just pull us like, I don't know, maybe a few days before and go, "Listen, this is how it is." I'd much rather be on open and honest and just go, this is the reason.
That's why I'll never be a goalkeeper, mate. Because everyone says, "Oh, when I'm a manager, I'm going to do that." And no one ever does it.
No, they don't.
Because they're protecting themselves. You know, they'll have their reasons. They're not doing it to spite you. They'll be there. Reason is somewhere in the chess game that they can't do it. And
347 Man City appearances, mate. Jesus, that's not bad. That, you know, 12 years.
It's a long time, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say three or four of them spent on loan. But yeah,
it's a good slog. That
got to ask you about the loan. Actually, we were talking about it just briefly. Got to ask you about the loan in Torino. So you went in 16-17 season, and obviously a few English players have been abroad, but how was the experience for you, and was it an easy decision?
Awesome. That was a wild part of my life. I was kind of well established at City, well established with England. Managers changed, you know, obviously we all know, well, we don't all know, but Pep came in. I wasn't his goalkeeper. I'm 2 years into a 5-year deal, a strong deal that someone can't just rip up. I'm technically an asset at the club, so they can't just give me away, even though they didn't need me anymore. So it was a bit of a mess. So obviously I'm trying to, you know, it's fine, it's whatever. If that's football, I love Man City. My love for them will never change, but I love the club. You know, if the team changes and the moments change, then I need to change. And if the most important guy there doesn't want me, then I need to go somewhere else. So anyway, tried to move here. It was right at the end of the transfer window, so it was busy. Where people have made decisions on goalkeepers. Can this work? No. Can that work? No. All right, this is working. Yeah, but they won't pay this, or they'll be in charge of this. They haven't got that in the budget.
A lot of factors come into it at that
mental.
Point. Then.
Goalkeeping is so mental. Oh. It's like a house of cards, isn't it? Yeah, like it's such a jigsaw.
Once it gets going, it will get going. But it needs something to get going first for it to happen.
But it already got going. It already happened.
Yeah.
So Anyway, I was away with England, Big Sam's first England camp, and he still picked me even though I hadn't started the first two games. It was obvious that I had to go somewhere. And it was like right at the end of August, and then this kind of Torino thing came up. I don't know how it happened. I don't know how, you know, they're not a big money power force in Italy. They're seventh, eighth in the league. But anyway, behind the scenes, they'd made it work. And like Foz said, I just wanted to play. I didn't want to be involved in the whole chaos. And if they were going to let me go there, then I was like, hell yeah, let's go there. Like, why not? If that's my only opportunity, then, you know, load me up, we're going. And I absolutely loved it. It was an amazing place, amazing city. I went there in the recent international break, made some good friends. Wicked football club, huge, lot of soul, lot of heart of the city. And I loved it. Loved trying to learn the language.
Pick much Italian up?
No, mate. So I've gone there at 29, having probably put the brakes on my learning from about 14, 15, when things started to find their path. So to try and learn something again, like I was all up for it. I was like, I'm lessons, you know, I respect the culture. I want to go for it. I'd love to walk out of here. And I tried really hard, but it was hard to learn things. It's so hard to learn. And they used to, like the lads used to buzz off me, just pulling out my tiny bit of Italian and in the butt. Yeah, it was good.
The swear words, you just know all the swear words. Yeah. What do you need, mate?
Did you notice that the style of football was much different?
Yeah, I noticed that there was an awful lot of talk of build-up. There was a lot of talk of... Basically, what I got from it is everyone had a plan for 0-0. What was gonna happen until 0-0?
Yeah.
Games were really structured. As soon as someone scored, it was fucking carnage.
Really?
Yeah, because we'd constantly work in pattern of play, of playing against the system that we were expecting to play against and how we were going to counter it and how we were going to deal with it. But then as soon as the dynamic of the game changed... It wasn't boring Italian football anymore.
Plan out the window.
Yeah, yeah. It was like either backs to the walls or just gung ho going for it.
What was training like? Because every time I've had an Italian manager, they are just on it.
Yeah, it was. We trained at this place called C Sport. It was, of all the training grounds I've trained at, it was comfortably the worst. And I'm talking about like Shrewsbury Town League conference.
Really? Yeah. Park.
It was rubbish, mate. But it was. But it was amazing. It was amazing all at the same time. They moved out of it that year that I left and into a newer one. It was very hard to play football on. It was kind of ripped up, battered. The weather was it was very hot in the summer, and obviously it was like very cold in the winter. So the pitches were constantly battered, and the training was it was constant build up. It was constant shape. You know, I probably had about five or six, you know, small-sided games in the whole time.
Oh,
I was
wow.
Out. It was every day.
Yeah.
Trained every day. You were either in, you know, you were in there for hours, hardly doing anything. But I say all that, but it's still a great part of my life. And being around people that were used to it, you just get used to it.
Yeah.
You know?
I want to talk about some of the managers you've played for then, mate. One in particular who I have got a massive B in my bonnet about, okay? So you've played under some absolute monsters. I've got a nice little list here, by the way. Mancini, Pellegrini, Guardiola, Mourinho, Sean Dyche. I'm chucking him in there because I think he's class. And your current manager, Postecoglou. I want to talk about him in a minute. But the one I want to talk about, Nuno Espirito Santo, when he took over at Spurs, right?
Yep.
I've listened to a podcast you said, and you said in it, basically, that when he had made his mind up, you weren't for him. And that's fine. People do make their mind up.
Fruit.
But the reasoning for what his reasons why he didn't want you to be around anymore, I've got them here. Let me just read them out quickly. This is what he said. In my opinion, we all reach a point in our career where the body won't allow you to play football. We're at it now, Joe. I would not feel comfortable with you playing 1 minute for me. The ball's too quick for you. You're too old. You're not moving. You've got no strength in your body. Fuck off. What on earth, mate?
Yeah, there were some...
You're 34 years old at this point.
34, yeah.
My God, I'm not having it, mate. I'm sorry.
No. It was mad, mate. But Spurs were at a point where they really needed to do... They needed to have those... Not those conversations, but they needed to move people on. They needed to be honest. They needed to, you know, someone they didn't feel... Because they'd already brought Gallini in from Atalanta.
Yeah. He was on loan, weren't he?
With so they'd already made that decision. And I was like, look... Do I need to have a conversation here? Because I heard he'd signed. And that was when we had the conversation. I didn't agree. It was really hard and strange to hear. And then I thought, hang on, am I kidding myself? Because this guy's, you know, he's been a decent manager.
Yeah.
Has he seen something? He's also been a goalkeeper.
A goalkeeper as well. That's what I mean.
Apparently
yeah.
he was a goalkeeper. And I was like, the insecurity of me, of everyone was like, and then I was like, nah, that's wrong. Absolutely wrong. You can tell me you don't like me for this reason, or technically you can tell me you don't like me, but all those reasons you've given me are probably the
last thing I'd think of.
Are the things that I kind of have got in my locker.
Yeah.
No, even when I'm crap at being in goal, I've still got them in my locker.
Yeah.
Football's mad, isn't it? Some mad stuff happens.
It's like you said earlier on, though, it's like that chess.
Yeah.
With the goal. It's like that chess game, isn't it? And it was obviously that was his way of.
Yeah, that was his way of handling it. Maybe he thought, maybe two or three other guys had a similar conversation where he just went in on them. But I'd never had that conversation. And I just didn't, it just didn't feel right, especially as a guy. Like, I'm a pretty, pretty open to a conversation. I'm pretty open to being told that I'm not someone's cup of tea, that they think they can do better than me. Like, I've always made it clear that that's fine. You know, that happens, and people have opinions, and people like goalies more than like other goalies. And if I fall into that bracket, then it doesn't need to be awkward. It certainly doesn't need to be like that. But like I say, like, football's class, isn't it?
I'd say what you've just done for the last 2 years up at Celtic, mate, has probably paid any kind of doubts of any of that kind of stuff that was said from him anyway. So I don't agree with any of it, mate. I really don't. I just think if you're going to tell somebody that they're not for you, then you do it, but you don't come down to reasons that are just pure made up lies, basically. So I'll say that for you, mate. I'm not having it. Anyway, Jose Mourinho, talk to me about Jose. Good guy.
Yeah. I knew... COVID was a strange time for everyone, wasn't it? And I was out of contract at Burnley, and I was in the abyss of, I didn't have a contract for the first time in my life.
Yeah.
And I was having a few conversations, and then my agent was like, and the one slot I was like, I'll go anywhere, if I need to travel, I'm ready to travel, I'm ready to play. And it just, there just wasn't anything available, and I kind of found myself in the market where people didn't really want me.
Yeah.
That's, like I say, that's fine. People didn't want me. They didn't see me as an opportunity. And he was like, if you want to speak to Jose, he's really interested, but obviously, the role that he's offering. I was like, I can't speak to Jose because I know from the small encounters that I've had with him that if I speak to him, it's done. I want to go.
He'll hook you in.
Yeah, 100%. I knew there's no way that you could go to him or the conversation I knew that we were going to have where I could go, all right, okay, I'll bear that in mind.
Yeah.
If I spoke to him, I was done. Like, he's so charming. He's so charismatic. He's amazing. And so, worked on a few other things, and then it just felt like the right time. Sat down with the people closest to me and said, look, I'm going to do this. I'm going to speak to him. And if I go, I want everyone to hear me say these words. Worst case situation means I do not play a game of football for 2 years. Never. And so I want you to hear me saying that. And I want you to hear me saying I'm okay with that. Because I have to be, I think in that situation, you have to be okay with the worst.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than 2 months in, I'm going home and going, fucking hell, Hugo's playing in the FA Cup.
Yeah.
They've not picked me.
It's what it is realistic.
It's
probably not fully honest, because deep down you're going, no, I want to play.
There's a sniff. Yeah.
You've always got to have it in the back of your head. No, mate, I will show everybody what I can do. You always want to do that, but you have to be realistic sometimes as well, don't you?
And so I spoke to him, like I say, COVID, so it's FaceTime conversations. And he's just, as a person, he's an amazing guy to be around. Told me, he's obviously very knowledgeable. He's very, when it comes to these conversations, and I imagine he's had with many, many players, he'll give you two or three examples that you didn't think that he'd know about you, that he does know about
you.
And then all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, he's literally watching everything about me. He's not. But and I was like, you know what? I want a bit of that. It's strange, uncertain times. I'd love to go down there and see what I can do to help. And that's what I decided I wanted to do.
Boom, I love that, mate. And then your current manager, Ange Postecoglou, tell me a little bit about him.
Yeah, he's... I spoke to Ange when the Tottenham thing, and I was like, no, you know what? If something doesn't come up that I don't want to do, I'm not going to do it. And if it means that I have to sit another year and then that's me out of football, then so be it. I've done what I need to do in football. And I got asked to have a conversation with him. And, respectfully, I didn't know much about his background. And he was so cool. And I just said, I probably sounded like a strange guy because I went, I need to speak first. I don't mean this in a rude way, but this is what's gone on. This is why I'm struggling with football. I said, for me to work, this is how you'll get a best version of me if we do get there. You know, just honesty, give me a chance to show you what I can do. I'll help. I'll be a part of it. I said, all I want to do is be a part of something. Like, I don't like this kind of bit part here a year, there a year. Like, I need to be a part of something. I need to feel something. If you give me that opportunity, then I think...
All in, basically.
Yeah, all in.
Yeah.
And he said, look, that's what I'm looking for. I've liked you. I like you as a goalkeeper. He said, I'm not even going to talk to you about goalkeeping. I've done a bit of digging about you as a person. I'm getting very positive things. Yeah. I've done more digging about when you haven't been playing and, you know, you've always been a positive influence and someone trying to push and drive and help. So, you know, it's early stages in the talks, but I like what you've got to offer. And I was like, well, I like what you've got to offer. And then it just progressed from there. And then to work with, I didn't know that he was a total football manager. I didn't know that he literally turned up to Celtic on his own, didn't bring any staff with him, no, nothing. Just walked in and just an awesome force, an unbelievable coach, a really, really strong presence, very, very clear, know exactly where you stand, asks a lot of people, but asks because he believes that they can do it. And he's got us working as a unit. He's got different characters in. I think we brought in 11 players last year. We've brought maybe close to the same again. But everyone's just a cog in this moving in this ship that's trying to move forward. And that cog includes the fans. It includes the history. It includes the staff. It includes the backroom staff, the chefs, the people that work for the foundation. Like, he includes all that.
Yeah, and the ones you see every single day of your life.
We represent them and they represent us. And that's me. That's what I like. That's music to me. That's what I want to be a part of. So I couldn't be prouder to be here and happier to work under him.
Oh, mate.
That's lovely. Yeah, it's really great.
Just want to talk about Man City as a whole then, all right? So what was it? 347 appearances?
Yeah.
I remember that well. Yeah, 347. So of your 12 years that you were there then, yeah, I need like a top three or a top five or something of the players that when you were there made you go, whoa.
A top five. Richard Dunn has got to be in the really? Top five.
He
made me go, whoa, because he was just like, he was really strong. He was really aggressive. He was so consistent. He was quick. He was holding together a tough team. And he was, you know, four years in a row, player of the season. Everybody loved him. Everybody respected him. And he was... I thought he was, you know, that if we're going to go full 12 years.
No, damn right as well. And I love that. Do you know why? Because he was on that cusp of when money started to come, but he was still there and he was still doing a bit, but he doesn't get mentioned in the same breath as some of the big boys, does he?
That's the beauty of Man City. You know, I respect that they're a new powerhouse. They are a new powerhouse and they're new fan base. And you could probably go to... in a shopping mall in Malaysia and a young guy will be wearing a 9 Haaland shirt. All stuff like that's special, but... they definitely did exist before.
Damn right they did as well.
Team
yeah,
is there now, and that is
Nicky Weaver existed, mate. Come
Nicky
on,
Weaver or
Sean Gota and
heck
the girl,
yes.
Paul Dickoff.
Yeah,
Main Road. I like Paul Dickoff, and that I love the club. I love the club. Like, I genuinely and deeply in love with Manchester City as a football club because they embraced me, 19-year-old from Shrewsbury. You know, they were down the lower end of the Premier League, but made me feel special. Made my family feel special. Made me feel safe. Yeah. Made my mum feel happy that her son was safe. It's great that they're who they are and what they are now. And I think they're amazing how they're doing it. But yeah, there's a lot more to it. So Dunny, Vincent is just a colossal human being, an amazing player, amazing captain. Look at him now. He's taken over the world, isn't he?
Vinny, do you know what I love about Vinny Kompany? He's just the guy that would come in, do his job, not sing or dance about it, go home, and he would just do it properly every single day, relentlessly. Six mil, I think they bought him for. Absolute peanuts in today's money.
Every day, on it, put his body through hell, played, you know, literally, he'd be pulling his calf, pulling his quad. Every four or five games, it was so frustrating because if we knew Vinny was playing, like, we knew we were strong.
You're good, yeah.
You know, I've played with some, you know, Micah, Zaba, Gale, Collar. I'd feel guilty naming names.
Yeah.
Jolyon.
Picking individuals out.
Yeah. Then you've got like Gaz Barry, anyone inside of football. You mentioned Gareth Barry's name. They go, what a player.
Yeah.
What a player. Like James Milner, everyone, you know, can have your fun about him just being fit. He's not just fit. He's fucking brilliant.
Mate, explain to people the importance of having a James Milner in your team. How integral is that to winning trophies?
Not many have got James Milner's. That's how important he is.
Yeah.
James Milner's, I was thinking the other day, like, he's a good winger. He's a very good fullback. He's a amazing centre mid.
Yeah.
He played up front for us for a patch when we were struggling with strikers and he was wicked.
But he'd do all of it with a smile on his face.
And he'd get, but just to the best of his ability, and he's talented as fuck, man. He's been about since he was 16.
Yeah.
He's got skill. He's got, you know, shooting left and right foot, like crossing, distribution, obviously engine, obviously tackling, wicked player. I don't like that he's just known as, it's got nothing to do with me how he's known and how people see him, but he's like a bit of a Gaz Barry, isn't he?
Yeah,
like Gaz Barry. So 700 odd appearances. Yeah, he's a bit of a legend.
Nah, underappreciated.
Fucking good, man. Like really good footballer.
Yeah, damn right.
Then obviously you got Yaya's just a phenom. He was frustrating. He was frustrating, but geez, when he decided it was time to win a game, he'd just go and win it.
There you go. Have a bit of that.
Yeah, David. Just an amazing Silver. Little character, David Silva. Oh. Amazing little character, but unbelievable footballer. And I used to laugh every day. Like, he's not fast. He's so one-footed, it's a joke. He's weak. But then again, no one could touch him.
Yeah, his brain was just superior.
No one could touch him.
Yeah.
That's what makes football, right?
That is the beauty.
In a world of like stats
he never used his right foot. He didn't head it, obviously. He was, I don't know, 5'3". He wasn't particularly strong. About 8, probably start doing bicep curls for the summer. No real power in his left foot.
Yeah, I know. If you're building him on like Championship Manager or something, you went buying him.
Nah.
Like, he's not turning out for a League Two team.
But wow, what a player. And what a guy as well. Like, really good guy. Good guy, fun guy. Then there's obviously Kun up front, Tevez. I played with Kevin, played with Raheem. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, that's a bit of a harsh top five of us.
That's a bit of a harsh top five.
Let's call
it a top 50. And there's Zeko. He's still right at it.
Sami Nasri, like, when it comes to being talented footballers, to be able to, like, he could just roll out, got a pair of size 8s, bang them on, and just beautiful
good
footballer.
Good to go.
Beautiful footballer.
And there's one other guy. Why always me?
Mario.
Super Mario.
Yeah.
Tell us about Mario.
Because he gets a bit of a bad rep, but from everything I've heard, and I know some of it might be from you, but he was a good guy, right?
Mario was harmless. Mario was just a big kid. He found a way for everything to be him.
Yeah.
And it was mad. It was that side of him was tough. But in terms of him genuinely as a person and like having a good heart and just being a sweet guy, that was him. He just needed attention all the time.
Yeah.
He just needed
a bit of love.
You know, a bit insecure or however you want to see it. But he was all right. He was a good lad, Mario.
Right, mate. This has been incredible, by the way. I've buzzed off this so much.
We haven't
much.
Talked about England, have we? Like,
we don't need to talk about England.
You two have got a couple of nice stories, haven't you?
What's the stories we've got for England?
Well, you've got your mate, Fabio.
John.
And John.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. We can have a little chat on this then quick then. Right. So, all right. Let's take it back then to Brazil 2014. Okay.
Yep.
Rio. We had a good time, didn't we? The goalies had a good time.
We did. Yeah.
It didn't work out quite so well for the England team.
It really didn't.
No, it really did.
No, it hurt, man. Yeah, it really didn't.
I know. But we had a nice time. So the goalie union, me, you, Fraser Forster, basically gymmed every day, smashed the life out of it.
Yeah.
A bit of golf, a bit of this. But when it came down to it, training, mate, it was incredible, weren't it?
Yeah.
We were popping every single day.
Yeah, loved it. Loved training with you and Fraser. I think we had a great dynamic. Obviously, we all got on well with Dave Watson, great goalkeeper coach. And, mate, I'm just, to be honest, England career-wise, I loved it and I'm proud of it, but I'm also gutted that, like, it just didn't really come to much.
Yeah, 75 appearances.
Yeah, I know, 75. And amazingly proud to have said that I represented my country and, you know, captained it and played with all these top players, but yeah, just gutted, mate.
Yeah.
Like Brazil, like we were there 10 days. We had a World Cup in Brazil. Two really fine games against Italy, a good Italy team, a good Uruguay team. That's not an excuse. They just facts fell the wrong side of them. Yeah, nuts.
I'm with you, mate. They were good. They weren't brilliant, though, were they?
No.
It always seemed like, though, that we just would fall short. It's as simple as that. Yeah. We would just fall short, inevitably.
Yeah, yeah.
And then a few years before that, Fabio Capello. So I've got a few little sort of like Fabio Capello stories. Because I think I've said before in the past that me and him didn't really see too much eye to eye.
Yeah.
I remember there was a few funny stories actually. So at that time when we were playing under Fabio Capello, I remember us training. It would have been me, you, and who else would have been there at that time?
Mate, it was a revolving
door. It was a revolving door.
Kirkland, it was Green, it was James.
John Ruddy was in for a bit afterwards, Carson, and all that. John Ruddy.
Who else was there? Stockdale.
Wow, David Stockdale. Big Stocky. Go on, bigger.
Stocky was there. Yeah, it was wild, mate. Paul Robinson.
Paul Robbo was there as well. Bloody hell, there's a few. We could have gone loads for a few more as well. I remember a few times, right, at training. He would come behind and he would watch the goalies and he would just be watching us. And you knew that he was going to say something.
He was brewing from the weekend
before. Brewing. When Joe says brewing, but he means he's just miserable. He's just angry.
He'd have seen something in every single one of our games. And he was coming up, and some maybe first day, maybe second day, he was coming over and was just going to let loose. I loved how he just let loose about what he wasn't happy with.
Yeah.
It wasn't a discussion. And John, la la la, Crystal Palace, rah, here. And then just go, right, okay, Sam, nice one. I'll work on that one, shall I?
He used to do that an awful lot. That's what I mean. Like I say, I don't want to talk about it too much, but there was the way that he kind of, his management, he was obviously a very good manager, I just felt on a personal level, there probably wasn't that respect there that I felt a manager should be.
But wait there a second, you're overlooking the John.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for exactly that. So he used to call Joe John. Like he would honestly say it to your face, John, and you would go, no, it's Joe.
That's what I mean. That's how I think his players were just his players to him. Like I find that he only called Crouchy was the only one who got a Crouchy and a Wazza. Everyone else was a really formal.
Yeah,
really
first formal name.
Like if it was Art or Foster or John. It was like you worked for him, which is fine. That was his way of working. But the John thing, that was hard to take.
Yeah. Anyway, come on, we're going to move on from Capello. Yeah, okay. Right. Have you heard of a thing called ChatGPT?
No.
Right. Okay. So this is like in the world of like tech and science and all this new computer fangled stuff, right?
In the world of Ben Foster. Is that what
you're saying? No. It's not my game. Like this is Seba's game here. This is Seba's game here. Who does all the kind of? He's the clever one, right? So anyway, there's this new thing called ChatGPT. Apparently, it can do anything for you, right? If you want it to write you a song, it will write you
a song.
I've
heard of it. Apologies.
There you go. Boom.
Yeah, I've heard someone talk about that.
So anyway, right? I downloaded the app earlier today, and I thought, I wonder what if I put in what are interesting questions for Joe Hart, what it would come up with. Okay. And fair play to it, mate. It's come up with some decent questions.
Right.
Genuinely, it's come up with some decent questions, all right? So it gave me 10. I'll ask you a few of my favourite ones, all right? Or ones that maybe people are going to want to know the answers to, all right?
Okay.
What has been your greatest achievement in your career so far?
Still being here now and still playing at a level that I absolutely love being at.
With a big old smile on your face as well, Geez. What has been your biggest challenge as a goalkeeper and how did you overcome it? See what I mean? How good are these questions? This
really
is an AI robot, by the way.
Great question.
Yeah,
AI
see?
Robot.
See?
What's my biggest challenge? I think it's just daily just being a goalkeeper and how I've overcome it. I haven't, but I've managed it pretty well.
Yeah, I think that's the key. I don't think you're ever going to smash it, you know.
Nah.
You're never going to master it.
No way.
But you can live with it.
Maybe there was a moment in my life where I thought I had mastered it and I got a pretty rude awakening.
Right. Can you share a defining moment in your career that shaped your playing style? How good are these questions, by the way? Look, that's what they look like.
Playing style.
It's good, isn't it?
I don't even know what my playing style is. I know
what your playing style is.
Go on.
It's a bit like Peter Schmeichel. big and brave and a leader on the pitch?
Right, okay.
There you go. I'll answer that question for you,
Thanks,
right?
Mate.
Is that a playing style?
Yeah. Without doubt. Big and brave and like commanded. Yeah. That's exactly what it is.
Say that.
There you go. I'll answer it for you, mate. How do you prepare yourself mentally now before a big game?
Bore an L. Every single game the same. As in, do my prep, train to the best I can, know what I need to know as best I can know about the opposition, put my boots on, put my gloves on, go for it.
That'll do. Don't overthink it.
No.
Bosh. Love it.
And the rest of my kit, just in case.
And the what?
Obviously, I didn't mention that I had kit on.
Yeah, and I look a bit weird just for your boots and gloves on. What do you think is the key to being a successful goalkeeper?
No idea.
Love that. Which goalkeeper, past or present, do you find most inspiring and why? That's a good question.
Excellent question. All different ranges, who's springing out. So many different factors. There isn't one. But Gigi's just on that level for me, just because him as a goalkeeper, love him. Been lucky enough to share a field with him. Loved watching him. Know that he knows that his importance in the game and the eyes of a goalkeeper and how he behaves is phenomenal. Have you ever played him against him?
No, never played against him.
Just amazing to be around. He makes you like a Jose, makes you feel like he knows you, makes you feel like he has an interest in your life. And I think that's to have that responsibility of being like one of the top men and to still make, I could, you know, obviously I felt it and I was like, fuck, Gigi knows who I am, he knows about him. Yeah. But then I'm watching him when he's in the tunnel with other goalies and I just see him making them feel the same. I just think that's special.
That is special, that. Mm. I watched him on telly a couple of years ago and I remember he would have been 39, 40 or whatever. Yeah. And oh, mate, he was phenomenal to watch because he was still one of the best goalies in the world, even at 39, 40. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Reading the game. Yeah, right, yeah. But reading the game, do you know what I mean? I think nowadays, like, one of the biggest skills you can have is that nous, do you know what I mean? Reading the game.
Which is impossible to explain.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Exactly that. It is impossible. Right, a couple more to go, mate, and then we're nearly there, all right? How has the sport of football changed since you first started playing?
The sport hasn't changed. The rules have obviously changed a bit. The people in it and the way that it is as a business, the way that people see it, that I've been around players now, I've gone from being football players to athletes, to potential brands, to being told what to do, to now just taking complete control of their own situations. Yeah. And living in their own world rather than being in someone else's in terms of being told what to do and how to behave and when to be in at night.
That's deep, that, isn't it? Nice. It's true, though. It is exactly true. And finally, what advice would you have for young aspiring goalkeepers?
Just fucking go for it.
Boom!
Go for it. Just go for it. Don't try and be anything other than the best that you can be and just go for it.
Mate, Joe Hart, you have been absolutely incredible,
world-class.
Mate.
Thank
seriously,
you so
that
much.
Was wicked. You are the man.
Love your work, guys.
Nah, seriously, you smashed it.
Doing great stuff.
We finish every podcast by looking into that camera there and saying, up the Fozcast.
Up the Fozcast.
Up the Fozcast.
Didn't even have to ask him to do that. He just knows how to do it.
Well done, mate. Brilliant. Thank
really
you.
Really good, guys.
Class. Thanks, everybody, for watching. We hope you enjoyed the latest episode of the Fozcast. Don't forget to give us a follow on Spotify. Up the Fozcasts.